Hey everyone, this is Harmon. Welcome to Comedy History 101. We are going to school you in comedy. Today we have a very special reprise of an episode on Dick Gregory, from comedian to activist. Yes, Dick Gregory is one of the most influential comedians of all time, and you will find out exactly why. Also, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcast. It kind of helps us out. And before we jump into the episode, a few things to plug. On June 11th, 7:30, in New York City at the Asylum Theater, I will be running my show, The Muff, a parody show of The Moth. You know The Moth. Some people love it, some people hate it, but, you know, it's filled with a lot of storytelling tropes that we satirize in our show, The Muff, a parody show of The Moth. Once again, on Friday, June 11th, 7:30, at the Asylum Theater in New York City. Tickets can be found on asylumnyc.com. And now, without further ado...
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
I also found out that comedy is the hardest job in the world today. People are so worried about world problems. Everybody likes to talk to the comedian. You know, in my traveling, if I could believe everything people told me, we wouldn't have a racial problem in this country. Because everybody I meet in the nightclub after they get drunk, they all tell me the same thing. Greg, some of my best friends are colored. And Mike, you know and I know it's not that many of us to go around. Because I like them so well, I had them for parents.
So what you heard there was a clip of the late, great Dick Gregory, filmed in the early 60s at the Hungry Eye Comedy Club in San Francisco. And yes, you've tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in comedy. I am Harmon Leon. With me is Scott Kalanico. Scott, how are you?
Coming at you straight out of Berlin, Harmon.
Straight out of Berlin. So when you hear of Dick Gregory, I think you think of equal parts comedian, equal parts activist. Yeah. So Dick Gregory, bring you up to speed, was not only a comedian, but also he was a civil rights activist, a vegetarian activist, a social critic, an author, and he came in at number 82 on Comedy Central's list of the 100 greatest stand-ups of all time. Scott, when you hear Dick Gregory, what comes to mind?
The first thing that actually comes to my mind is his activism. Because I knew who Dick Gregory was, of course. And then, you know, when we're doing research on this episode, I learned quite a bit more. Because I mostly knew him as an activist. And I didn't realize he had, like, had such a huge impact in the comedy world.
So the clip we just saw was from the early 60s. And Dick Gregory began his stand-up career in the late 50s. And I would say, if you look back at the most influential comedians of all time, regardless of, you know, Comedy Central's list, everyone always turns to Lenny Bruce, which, if you listen to Lenny Bruce today, I mean, do you go, okay, I want to hear some comedy, put on some Lenny Bruce?
not really, not especially when he's not reading his trial transcripts. But, you know, even
but even the other stuff, it's just like really kind of dated. And again, mostly, you know, diving into this episode of Dick Gregory, and for better or for worse, his material is still topical to this day. Because he took it, it was African-American comedians' take on racism and bigotry of the early 60s, which sadly is applicable to the 2020s.
About 3 months ago, I worked up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and everybody told me, said, Greg, you love this state of Minnesota. We have terrific civil rights laws. And in this state, you'd never know you're Negro. And that's right. But they pick on the Indian. Which means to me, if that Indian ever pack his bag and leave that state of Minnesota, we better get on that next train out of there.
His material is you know, very much in tune. I think Lenny Bruce is more like he broke that barrier of free speech.
Yeah, he was more up at the language barrier, and Dick Gregory was more about the color barrier.
Yeah, but it still is material, and again...
But his material holds up, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 that's what I'm trying to say, is like his material holds up where Lenny Bruce's material, even before he was insanely just reading court transcripts, is mm-hmm. just very much dated and of the time.
Yeah, he tends to ramble.
But you said, so you know of like Dick Gregory as an activist, so before we do like our deep cut into the history of Dick Gregory, what activism did you previously know of Dick Gregory?
I knew he had run for president or had something to do with the elections in 68, and I just kind of knew that in passing, but you know, I learned a few things, you know, during the research for this episode, because I am a little bit of a... conspiracy buff, shall we put it. A lot of the people that Dick Gregory were hanging out with, a lot of the people that Dick Gregory hung out with were all very familiar to me.
Yeah, so let's, you know, we could jump around on this episode. Who were some of the people that he hung out with, which are just, you know, kind of monumental names in history?
Just do you mean like the people he hung out with in general?
Well, he was friends with Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was friends with Malcolm X. Yeah. He marched in Selma.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He took a bullet there. No, was that there? Oh, I think maybe it was a riot. It was in Watts.
Oh, it was in Watts. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was shot. That was it. He was talking to Merv Griffith, I think, on there. But yeah, so he was shot. Dick Gregory was shot in the Watts riots in
yeah. So before we dive further into the activism side of Dick Gregory, let's take the Wayback Machine, as you say, Scott. And
you can't say that, dude. No, people, that's copyrighted. You can say the comedic time traveling
portal. The comedic time portal. Mental note. To us, let's copyright in that term. So if other people use it, we could sue them.
Let's say comedy time portal.
Cool. Yeah, copywritten by Comedy History 101. Let's dive into the Dick Gregory origin story. He's originally from St. Louis. He was born in St. Louis in 1932. He grew up, he had a single mom. They had five siblings. I believe his dad, I think his name was Presley.
Yeah,
left the family. That's how I remember. Left the family early. His mom had to work, you know, long hours doing menial jobs. He began developing his comedy skill, as most comedians do, to defuse bullies.
One time he was actually beaten during a racial incident when he was 9 years old, when he was shining shoes and he got accused of touching a white woman's ankle.
Can I just say our country is just... so fucked
let's
up.
Let's just keep going.
Our country has always been fucked up. It's still fucked up.
Dude, Dick Gregory's only 9. We got a long way to go.
It's not so much about Dick Gregory. It's just so much about what
fucked up things
brought Dick Gregory into comedy prowess, which we'll get to later. That he was, you know, the first African American comedian to play white clubs. You know, that was a barrier that had to be crossed. So, anyways, he's a pretty amazing guy because he was a good student, but also really great at athletics, where he actually earned a track scholarship to Southern Illinois University, and not only was on the track team, but he also set school records for the half mile and the mile. And he was captain of the team, and he was also, you know, class president in high school.
Yeah, he found the small reminders of the inequality that he faced at college kind of one of his eye openers. He said, "I had been fighting poverty, but now I was fighting being a Negro."
But the place, Scott, the place where Dick Gregory found his comedy calling.
Should I give you a hint?
It's a place where a certain orange fuckpants didn't go because of bone spurs.
Oh, okay, yeah. Would that be the military, Harmon?
Yes.
But he did go to a military school. Let's keep that in mind. Where he loved it. No, Orange Fuckface.
Oh, Orange Fuckface went to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where he loved it?
Yeah, he loved being in military school.
But Dick Gregory, who didn't have bone spurs, in fact,
set
track records. He was drafted into the U.S. Army in 1954, and on the urging of a commanding officer, started performing comedy in Army talent shows.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty interesting. That's actually, there's always, because that's kind of the same in the Bill Hicks. He wasn't in the Army, but also the teacher, like in order, if you'll listen to back to our Bill Hicks episode, you know, because Bill Hicks was just so kind of hyper, like the teacher mm-hmm. wound up giving him like a few minutes at the start of the day to like tell Jack jokes in front of the school. And that kind of, that's like a, this motif that kind of pops up in a lot of these where, I can't remember who was the other comedian. I'll probably come back to it later. But there was another comedian.
Yeah. I have one. If you can't think of the other,
what do you got?
Steve Coogan.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Steve Coogan would say, because like Steve Coogan started sort of like doing impressions. That was his foray into comedy. And when he was like a school kid, he wasn't a great student, though. I think his dad was an engineer at IBM or something mm-hmm. like that. Or maybe even like something like Xerox, maybe even like older school computer-ish thing. So the teacher would allow Steve Coogan to open like the class with doing impressions of the other teachers in the school.
Yeah, there you go. That's a whole other episode, everyone. That's a whole other episode, everybody. Yeah, we'll come back to that.
And a whole other episode on this is also comedians that got their start in the military.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, I can't remember who the other guy. We'll come back to it. It was somebody we've done, but it was the same dude. Basically, one of his commanding officers gave him time to go do stand up. Just to, you know, get it out of the way. Much like Mr. Gregory to bring things back full circle.
Yeah, here. And so, again, he was from St. Louis originally, but when he was discharged from the Army, he moved to Chicago and would perform at night and work at the post office during the day.
Yeah, that was in, and there, while there, he performed like a lot of the black-owned clubs, the part of the Chitlin Circuit, as they used to call it back in the day, where, you know, he performed for mostly black audiences.
Both we've talked about in our history of party records, which there was, you know, essentially because how horrible our country's history is, there was just like a whole circuit strictly for African-American comedians because they were not allowed to perform in the white clubs. And also on the history of Moms Mabley.
Yeah. I mean, here's a good quote from Gregory about that. He's saying, "When I started, a black comic couldn't work a white nightclub. You could sing, you could dance, but you couldn't stand flat-footed and talk. Then the system would know how brilliant black folk were."
I mean, again, you know, it was like okay to be a singer, like a Sammy Davis Jr., mm-hmm. Performing at the white clubs, but if you were an African-American comedian speaking your mind about the politics of the day, that wasn't going to go over.
No. Oh, no.
Of course, now, don't get me wrong now. We're doing all right. Well, at the rate we're going 10 years from now, you might have to be my color to get a job. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't mind paying my income tax if I knew it was going to a friendly country.
So he came up, like, when he was coming up, you know, kind of in the black club circuit, he was along with comedians who we... First, we have to do one on Nipsey Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nipsey Russell, and get ready to go, Bill Cosby.
Okay.
And, of course, who is the star of the movie, the Mario Van Peebles movie, Watermelon Man, Godfrey Cambridge.
Godfrey Cambridge, yeah, exactly.
Have you seen Watermelon Man?
I might have seen parts of it. I think my favorite kind of movie from that era is the one that Robert Downey Jr.'s dad did, Putney Swope.
What was it called?
Well, it's called Putney Swope. It's
about advertising
agency. I mean, the first scene's kind of funny because it's like all these white guys in this room and one black guy, and it's an advertising agency, and they're all trying to determine who's going to be the next head of the advertising agency. So I think everybody winds up voting for the black guy because they don't think anybody else will vote for him. So he winds up winning. So he winds up becoming the president of the ad agency. And then it's just all about, like, you know, parodies of ads and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, it's like super crazy 60s kind of weirdness.
Yeah, that's the thing with Watermelon Man. I believe that's early 70s. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like almost like a Eddie Murphy would be influenced by it, where Godfrey Cambridge, I've only seen the trailer, and I'm going to check out the whole movie. He plays Godfrey Cambridge in makeup, is like a white businessman. And one morning, you know, and he's just like horrible to people, and he's just kind of racist. But one morning he wakes up and he's Godfrey Cambridge.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. Then comedy hijinks ensue.
Yes.
But for Dick Gregory, part of his sort of comedy timing and prowess was he was considered sort of like a Mort Saul type. So part of his early act was he was like Mort Saul, where he would hold up like the newspaper headlines of the day.
You know, about 10 times a week, I have fellas walk up and ask me the same question. Say, Greg, how come they're not sending white troops to the Congo? Now, how I know? I mean, I don't even know my Social Security number. But if we quit worrying so much and stop and think, you could figure out these questions for yourself. Everyone knows darn good and well why they're not sending white troops to the Congo. War brides.
Kind of a satirist.
Yeah, so Gregory was sometimes called the Black Mort Saul, where in turn, Gregory referred to Saul as the white Dick Gregory.
Exactly.
And his comedy style was, like, you know, it was very sophisticated yet quirky and sort of like the Bob Newhart variety. He had like great jokes about the politics of the day, such as like segregation is not a bad thing. Have you ever heard of a collision where the people in the back of the bus got hurt?
I had a thing where they ask people where they're from. Alabama. You know, I spent 20 years down there one day and they just go crazy. You can just hear the laugh, the giggling. When you can go past laughing and get to giggling, man, that's when you're cooking.
He had a couple of comedy albums, the 1961 album In Living Black and White, and the 1962 album Dick Gregory Talks Turkey.
But his biggest break would have come kind of around the same year, 1961, when Gregory was working at the black-owned Robert Shaw Bar in Chicago, when he was spotted by none other than Mr. Bunny himself, Hugh Hefner.
Oh, so first of all, on that, not only was Gregory working at the black-owned Robert's Show Bar in Chicago, but he was, early on in his career, he was made the master of ceremonies at the club. So he was like the house MC.
Yeah, so Hugh saw him one night, and he needed a He needed someone to replace one of his other performers, a Professor Irwin Corey, who I've heard of.
What do you know of him?
I don't know much. He was kind of a crazy character dude, but well, definitely that's another episode down the line. So Hefter hired Gregory to play for it was supposed to just be one night. It was gonna be $50 for one night, and they just loved him, and then so it wound up being. That one night turned into 3 weeks, which then turned into 3 years. So that's when he first kind of got discovered. He had a profile in Time magazine. You know, his album came out that year, and he really hit the big time, as they said in Time at the day. New York, Dick Gregory, 28, has become the first Negro comedian to make his way into the nightclub big time.
Hugh Hefner had the most prestigious club in the world because of his book. When I worked there, it wasn't but one Playboy club in the whole world. But people came in from all over the world because it was a status symbol. To have a key to the Playboy club is like having a Mercedes now. And people came in from all over. I mean, it became a tourist attraction for Chicago. And so when I get called down there, they say $50 for that one night. So I'm thinking, if I was working 7 nights a week, had no idea I would be one day. I say it's 50. I didn't know it was that much money in the world. $50 a night times 7. So I go down there. And I'm not thinking of anything. I didn't know at the time that a Negro is not permitted to work a white nightclub. That's in all of America. And I remember not knowing that. I used to practice, what do you do when some white person yell something negative out or embarrass you? And so I used to practice with my wife, but it didn't work because she was too nice and kind. And then one day I did something and she said something to me and I heard that tone. I said, that's the tone I want. That's the tone.
Yeah, so again, that's crazy. Like that clip we heard up front, which was filmed at the Hungry Eye in San Francisco, which we talked about on our history of the Purple Onion in San Francisco, that famous legendary club, was the cutaway shots of Dick Gregory on stage, and then it cuts away to the audience, and it's just crowd of Leave It to Beaver Dad type white people laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the whole kind of segregated type of audience and club, because, you know, he broke sort of the barrier of working, as he said, flat-footed on stage for white audiences.
Yeah, but he kind of started hitting the big time and making pretty good money, and then future came calling.
Yeah, so The Tonight Show. Okay, so for our listeners out there, at one time, The Tonight Show was not hosted by Jimmy Fallon.
Or Johnny Carson for
or Jay Leno
or Jay Leno. Oh my God.
Or Steve Allen.
Or Steve Allen.
No. So in the early 60s, and I guess we should probably do an episode on this, is The Tonight Show was hosted by one Jack Parr. So because of his performances at the Playboy Club, the producers of Jack Parr came a knocking, and they asked Dick Gregory to be on the show. What was his response, Scott?
Well, Harmon, you know, believe it or not, Mr. Gregory said no.
And why was that?
You know why, Harmon? Because he wanted to come sit on the couch. Because usually most black performers, they would have come out, they would just do their set, and then they would leave. But in this case, Gregory wanted to actually sit down on the couch with the host, Jack Parr, and have a conversation. You know, what normal things happen on talk shows.
Yeah, so that... Okay, so let's unpack that for a moment. At one time in our country's history, that was a thing.
Yes, that was indeed a thing.
So he turned down the Tonight Show initially because they wouldn't let him sit on the couch and have panel, as we call it today.
And that was in 1962.
Yeah, so eventually, what happened when he eventually did get to be on the Jack Parr Show and did get to sit down and do panel with Jack Parr?
Well, this is in Mr. Gregory's words, this is exactly what happened. I went in there and I sat on the couch talking about my children. So many people called the switchboard NBC in New York that the circuits blew out. Andy said thousands of letters came in and folks were saying, I didn't know black children and white children were the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
1962.
I was honest. I wasn't disrespectful. I wasn't mean. I wasn't bitter. And from that, Hefner brought me back for 2 weeks. That was the first time in the history that a Negro comedian had been booked in a white nightclub.
But because of The Tonight Show, Dick Gregory, his salary jumped from $250 for 7 nights of work. I believe he was getting, $50 a night?
Yeah, at the Playboy Club.
With three shows a night at the Playboy Club, he jumped to $5,000 a night.
Yeah.
And within the next year and a half, he made $3.9 million.
Yeah, that's not too shabby.
In early 1960s money.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, we talked about this and we're going to do an entire episode on the history of early Richard Pryor. The thing about early Richard Pryor was he was doing almost as well as Dick Gregory. You know, he was on the Ed Sullivan Show and he was just like a regular fixture on TV and was opening for Vegas, but he felt like his material, he was selling his material short. Where Dick Gregory always, it was always about politics were involved with his comedy.
Yeah, so then like that around the same time, we're talking about 65, he starts getting involved with all these civil rights causes. Like, for example, you mentioned that he became friends with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. He was speaking at a voter registration rally in Jackson, Mississippi with Medgar Evers. He delivered food to the NAACP offices. He did march in Selma, Alabama. And then, as we mentioned before, he got shot while he was trying to keep the peace during the 1965 Watts riots. So that Dick was not only, you know, on stage talking about equality, but he was out there doing something about it too.
Yeah, and at the same time, he was doing like great jokes on stage where, you know, just talking about, you know, travels in the South, like he going into a restaurant where the waitress would say, "We don't serve colored people here." And I said, "That's all right, I don't eat colored people." Or like he went into this other restaurant in the South and the KKK was there. He said, "Anything you do that chicken, we're gonna do to you. So I put down my knife and fork, I picked up that chicken, and I kissed its ass and said, "Line up, boys."
Yeah, that was in there.
So because of his success on The Tonight Show and at the Playboy Club, he also put out a couple of popular albums. Like I said, in 1961, he put out the album In Living Black and White. In 1962, he put out Dick Gregory Talks Turkey. He also put out a profound 1964 autobiography titled Something I Won't Say Out Loud.
I mean, you can say the N-word.
Well, okay, so it was called that. So first of all, I'll tell you what the book is about. It's impoverished childhood and dealing with racism growing up. And he wrote in the foreword that he told his mom, "Wherever you are, if you ever hear the word, fill in the N-word again, remember they're advertising my book," which is pretty edgy in 1964 terms. So again, in later years, so spoiler alert, Dick Gregory died in 2017, that in later years, he decreed the use of the euphemism term N-word, because he said you wouldn't have a swastika be a different symbol because you need to know what it means or the origins of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is in India.
But the racist impact of it.
Yeah.
So, Scott, next week we will come back and we will cover the activism side of Dick Gregory, which is again, like, you knew him as an activist, you didn't really know him as a stand-up comedian, but how long did Dick Gregory perform as a comedian?
Well, of course, you know, at the end of his life, is just performing again, but around 1973, or was in 1973, Gregory stopped performing in clubs, he says, because by this time he was a vegetarian and he was losing weight, and he said he wasn't performing in clubs because smoking and drinking were allowed, but, you know, part of it could be because he was kind of probably starting to lose some work because of all the activism he was doing. You know, at that point he was very active in the activism scene, so it'd be more than two decades before he returned to the stage.
Yeah, and it's so funny, like that clip we saw up front and the clip where he was on the Mike Wallace TV show, he kind of gave off a vibe of Dave Chappelle, because and again, different era, while he's doing stand-up, he's also chain smoking at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, so, and again, on Chappelle's special, he's the only comedian in modern history that you see also just chain-smoking his whole set. So, again, it's like, and almost he has sort of, or Chappelle almost has like a Dick Gregory-esque sort of style with both kind of in timing in certain parts and, you know, topics.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, we will be back next week with part two of the history of Dick Gregory. And until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.